Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in. It's that time of the week. It's the Sooners on SI Podcast, episode 282. Ryan Chapman here, rocking with you down in Moore. No hoops today. He's got some other stuff he's trying to comb through. I think his laptop exploded. I don't know. It sounds weird. It sounds like a real pain in the rump. So it's just me and our man Carson Field. Carson down in Norman. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Doing great. The podcast admittedly doesn't feel... Doesn't feel the same without our man John Hoover today, but still great to be talking some Sooner sports with you as always. We have a lot of fun stuff to talk about, so let's get right into it.
Yeah, you can tell there I sound a little hoarse, a little cocky. Yeah. This weather, man, it does this all the time. When it goes like the February Oklahoma experience of 80 on one day and then whatever this overcast fog, it kills me. It kills me, but we will dive in. Let's start on the football front per usual. This past weekend, gosh, it feels forever ago, man. Oklahoma made it official on Saturday, I believe. Bringing in Nate Dreiling to be the inside linebackers coach. Wes Goodwin coming on to be what in the olden times would be an analyst, but is now just an outside linebackers coach. And then Brent Venables, I guess the big confirmation here, Carson, he is going to call the defense. So this is kind of where we left off last week. It's kind of what we thought it was going to be. But now that it's buttoned up, made official, you got that. You got Ben Arbuckle's contract rubber stamped. It's go time here, it feels like, for spring football.
Yeah, it's just nice for them, I feel like, to get some clarity on the matter. I felt like this search took a very long time, longer than a month, obviously, since Allie had left. Obviously, the fan base at one point convinced that Jim Knowles was going to step in. That didn't happen. People were saying Goodwin might get the job altogether and call the defensive plays. There were some other names thrown around. Sounds like it's going to be kind of a team effort between the linebackers coaches, Brent, which I don't think is a bad thing at all, especially considering Brent Venables is history with defense. He was obviously such a good leader of the Clemson defense in his almost a decade with the Tigers, led them to a national championship there. So I think as far as Brent Venables, there's still a lot unproven about his head coaching. I mean, only 3 seasons. It hasn't been the tenure that OU fans want at this point. He knows his defense, though. I think getting 2 proven position coaches at linebacker, one inside, one outside, I think that's a pretty good recipe for success.
Yeah, it should be comfortable. I know you weren't here for the Brent Venables, Ted Roof brain trust, that experience, but it was always like the question of how much is Ted Roof doing on Saturdays versus Brent Venables. I like the clarity of Brent just coming out because he never was super clear during the Roof 2 years of who was actually calling the defense. He'd always leave some vague, like we're both heavily involved, all this crap. Just let Brent call it. Like, if you're not going to get Jim Knowles, Brent Venables also one of the absolute best defensive coordinators in college football. My big question is just, it's not going to be with the defense or anything like that. It's going to be like the take a half step back in the full game management stuff? Is Britt going to be able to trust Wes Goodwin, Nate Dreiling, Brandon Hall, all those guys with, hey, I'm calling the defense here for this drive. I saw that this adjustment needs to be made, something with the linebackers. Because in year one, there were times that Brent Venables himself would have to scurry over real quick, get on the whiteboard, make the quick fix, do that thing. In year two, you didn't see that as much, even though there was still the like tug and pull of how much is Brent doing on a Saturday or not. I would imagine by year four, all those guys should be comfortable with making those adjustments when Venables hands them down, which you would hope would mean he will be able to stay on top of the game management, timeouts, stuff like that. I also would imagine instead of Britt Venables maybe overruling Ted Roof or something like that, and him just being like, I want to run this play, you should streamline that thing. So got no issue there on that side of things. Just a couple years ago, it was Matt Wells who helped him with some of the game management as an analyst. I wonder if there's a corresponding move of someone that's brought in like that, that isn't given the title of, you know, a linebackers coach or something, but just someone else that has elsewhere head coaching experience, or just the guy that we saw throughout the college football playoff. You had Marcus Freeman's analytics guy, right? That was standing right by him. I wonder if Britt ends up with just like a timeout analytics guy, something quite like that, which we see all over football. NFL sidelines have that. It's just that is my only question, not on the Britt Venables defense part. It's just the Britt Venables also have to be the head coach, the game management stuff, if that can be streamlined as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting you bring that up. The analyst, that is one of the most like interesting roles, in my opinion, in all of college football, because usually it's not totally specified what the said analyst does.
Yeah.
But usually it's someone with a lot of experience in the game. I mean, crap, Steve Sarkisian, he was an analyst for Bama, I guess, before he got the Texas job. So many former head coaches have done that and then made their return one day to head coaching. So they could potentially get somebody on the defensive side, a former coach or someone along those lines, to help out with the defense. That could be a great addition. But even not getting that far ahead, I think just for the players' sake, I mean, with so many new guys coming in for their defense, both recruits, transfer, stuff like that, it's got to be nice for them to have like, okay, these are our linebackers coaches. Brent's going to be calling the defensive plays. Now we know how this is going to look. So that's got to at least be a nice feeling of relief for them.
Yeah. And I wonder too, like if there's just someone that you trust that in the scrimmage stuff, they don't even have to be like a former head coach, that it's just like your whole job is to watch the clock. And I want to use these timeouts like this, this, and that. And then you just be the person that's also like, Hey, you're in timeout territory. Keep an eye on it. Stuff like that. Could be as simple as that. So we shall see. It's kind of a weird week right now, because in the olden days, we would have been as busy as could be this week with National Signing Day coming and going yesterday. For Oklahoma, much like many schools across the country, they got all their business done, dusted, not having to worry about anything yesterday, which kind of leads us to what's next. They're in the middle of winter workouts. Believe that a month from today is when spring practice is supposed to get going, March 6th, somewhere in there. So not able to get on the field and do any install stuff like that. It's mat drills and meetings. But when they kind of get onto the field, not that we're going to be able to view a ton of practice and stuff like that, that'd be great. But we just don't get that. It's Fort Knox over there. When you've been doing all of our transfer talk stuff, for a great deal of it, Carson, over at OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. If you missed any of it, it's the series we're running right now. You and Hoove talking to about the OU transfers that are coming in, talking to the people that covered them, who know them, who watched every snap, their whole story, stuff like that. As you've gone through this, I know that everyone is very excited, intrigued, juiced, all the things. To see John Mateer, the quarterback, he's obviously going to have a ton of load on his shoulders because he is the quarterback of Oklahoma. But as you've talked about some of these other guys, the non-Mateer division, I'd say, what are some of the guys that you kind of are really looking forward to getting some eyeballs on, maybe talking to in person to see if they can have a big-time impact this year for the Sooners?
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of guys on this list, both sides of the ball, that I think should be exciting for Sooners fans, but I think the receiving group that really stands out. You look at guys like Javonte Gibson at Arkansas Pine Bluff. Everybody that I talked to that covered him, worked on staff there, they spoke very highly, and they think he's going to be one of the better receivers in the SEC. Obviously, it's a very different skill level in the SWAC than the SEC, but heck of a season this past year for a not very good team. A lot of big playmaking ability there. Isaiah Cetegna from Arkansas had a good year for the Razorbacks this year. I've heard good things about him. People are saying that there are still areas that he needs to grow, but once he does, he's going to fit in really well with this offense. Some of the specialists are interesting too, especially Jacob Ulrich, punter from Kennesaw State. He'll, of course, replace Luke Elzinga, the punter for OU this past year. And Ulrich, Kennesaw State, they didn't get a whole lot of hype this year because they were 2-10. Not a great year for the Owls, but he did a phenomenal job. One of the better punters in the nation, semifinalist for the Ray Guy Award. One of the reporters I talked to about him said that he has potential to win that award one day. Who knows if that'll come true, but that's pretty high praise.
Yeah, and something that might have been the most consistent part of the team last year was that Luke Elzinga, pound for pound, might have been the best football player for Oklahoma. Pound for pound, obviously. Billy Bowman, Danny Stutsman, those guys are incredible. DeJounte Terry, but Doug Deacon, he came in, he did a really good job in year one. I thought the special teams got a lot better, a lot more buttoned up and things like that in the punt game. And so we'll see there. I'm juiced to see what Jovani Gibson, he's a guy that I mean, I think you remember going all the way back to when he committed. We were all very, very intrigued by him, and it became the rush of like, how much Arkansas Pine Bluff can we find to try and like actually watch him a little bit? But I'm excited to see what that turns into. I'm just excited to see what a healthy wide receiver room looks like for this Oklahoma team. The offensive line, some of those guys, I'm more interested like the freshmen of Ryan Boje, Michael Pisucci, when they come in, what they can do. But who've had a really good story on Kendall Daniels, who obviously very, very familiar bags in Oklahoma State by way of a little bit of stint there at A&M. I'm fascinated. I mean, Kendall Dolby went down. It was a really, really nasty injury. He'll be able to come back next year. But Kendall Daniels, at the absolute worst, feels like an insurance policy to get Kendall Dolby back up and running. And if that's a guy that can really the light bulb turn on for him in Brent Venables' defense in year one, which is tough. We see that those guys get a lot better in year two as they kind of go on. Someone who's had experience doing everything, like every skill set Brent Venables is going to ask of him at the linebacker spot, at the cheetah spot, the safety, whatever you want to call it, he has done in his collegiate career. He's done it for a pretty high level defense, things like that. I'm excited to see if he's someone that I know caught a lot of criticism at the end of last year for some of the loafs and stuff. I wonder if him kind of a change of scenery, a new level of competition, having to prove yourself at a new school. I wonder if that can kind of bringing the competitor back out of him that we saw the previous couple of years.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's possible. I mean, he's proven enough. He's done some great things for the Cowboys. I mean, people forget this because they were so bad on defense this year. They've had some good defenses the last few years before 2024. And he was a big reason why. One of their kind of ball hawk players, one of their leading tacklers, a lot of different ways that he can hurt opposing offenses. And obviously, not a perfect player. Was on a defense that very much, like I said, struggled in 2024. But you've got to like that ad from a lot of different perspectives. One, getting a local guy from Oklahoma, loves the state, even if it's going from one rival to the other. And then just someone that has done it at a power four level, put up some really good numbers for the in-state rival. It's just added depth too. So there's a lot of different ways to look at it. But overall, I think that's just a great get by them too.
Yeah, speaking of the light bulb coming on, interesting to see what Marvin Jones Jr., if he can come in too. And we know all the talent in the world. He's a guy that I don't know if I think people around Georgia probably felt like he underwhelmed. And then it's one of those things like, does the production you see in the box score match how productive he could be? How devastating he could be if it really comes live? I'm interested there too. So we'll see as we roll into the spring. Thankfully, Oklahoma will have a spring game that we'll be able to watch. It'll be Masters weekend, the Saturday of Masters weekend. But did you see Matt Rhule nixing the spring game because he's worried about guys coming in and poaching his play? What a bizarre like development for spring games.
I guess that's the Connor Stallions impact or something like that, but that is crazy. I saw that and I don't get that. I think Matt Rhule's a phenomenal coach and I think that Nebraska program's on the rise, but that's just I've never heard of something like that. That shocked me when I saw that.
Well, it's so funny. It feels like when we talk about, I don't, maybe this is over dramatic, but let's make the umbrella spring game reform. When we talk about like that kind of stuff, I always think like, is there a way that you could turn the spring game into like more of an actual scrimmage? Like you look at regional stuff, like, okay, Oklahoma State has Tulsa on the schedule this year, but Oklahoma doesn't. Is there a way that maybe like Oklahoma and Tulsa could scrimmage and Oklahoma State and North Texas could scrimmage? Do you get more out of that? Do you get less out of that? Kind of like we see like joint practices in the NFL when it comes to, we always get a hard knock fight, we always get a camp fight. It feels like for years and years that was like the spring game conversation. I did not have on my radar us moving toward nixing spring games because coaches are mortified that they're gonna broadcast on the Big Ten Network and suddenly a coach is gonna see someone that 2 weeks prior they had no idea existed. Like your roster, you can't hide your roster. Everyone knows who your roster is.
Yeah, no, I agree. That is definitely bizarre. You know the personnel. In this day of technology, you're gonna see everything that every athlete can do on that team. So there's only so much you can hide, which makes that even more bizarre. But just kind of piggybacking off what you said first, I've always thought about that. Like a preseason for college football in the spring. Oklahoma plays Tulsa, Oklahoma State, North Texas, A&M plays against Sam Houston, like stuff like that, I feel like would generate more interest than just intra-squad stuff. It would be kind of fun. I think it would get more fans out there from multiple fan bases. So I'm with you. We need to jumpstart that. Let's petition that to the NCAA. I like it.
They always talk about like game day atmospheres and how do you know what people like when the lights come on. Well, I maybe I'm wrong. I feel like more people be I am way more interested in Oklahoma and Tulsa playing, even if it's not like a fully structured 4-quarter football game and some of the stuff's more controlled. And maybe it's okay, we're gonna do each team's gonna get to do 4 drives of red zone stuff, or you know what I mean? Like I'd be way more
Yeah.
interested in that than a spring game where everyone's. So like it become some of these games have become flag football games, basically.
Yeah, 100%.
So we will see there. I guess Texas was looking into doing less of a maybe doing it with the spring game, not because of worry about people getting poached, but by making it more of an OTA model and stuff like that and going less padded, like an NFL style. We'll see. I don't know how beneficial or not beneficial that would be, but I don't know. It's all weird. If the spring portal even exists here in a couple of years, that window, we'll see. That's all got to be sorted out by the coaches association and all that stuff. We had talked about that a couple of weeks ago. So other than that, we're about a month away from spring football firing authors into workouts right now and breaking. Everyone can lift weights and they all look explosive. That's every school across the country. That's not an Oklahoma thing, but everyone is stoked with the work that's been happening through their first couple of weeks. Shocking, I know. Carson, let's move through some of the winter and spring sports here as crossover season gets going officially. Softball starts today, Thursday. Baseball season gets going next week. But let's start on the hardwood. Let's start on the men's side of the Lloyd Noble Center. A big week. This is a big couple of weeks, right? As we've talked about, Vanderbilt and Auburn will go chronologically. Vanderbilt was touch and go there at times in the first half, but man, Carson, o Oklahoma put together their best second half of the season, their best half of basketball this season. I know that Vanderbilt's just on the last four in line, but you got to pick up those games, especially at home, if you want to just stay alive. That's exactly what Oklahoma did on Saturday.
Yeah, that was the best I've seen Oklahoma basketball look since covering this team. They looked phenomenal. The defense was incredible, and it was not just a five-man effort. They went about nine deep for that too. So that was really impressive. They were making their shots, avoiding the dumb fouls. They just played good, clean basketball, and the result was outscoring them by more than 30 points in the second half. It was really shocking because first half of that game, you kind of mentioned they got out a little bit slow. A lot of the turnovers that plagued them in many of their other SEC games this year weren't shooting too well. It looked like, oh crap, this is going to be another down to the wire game that they probably lose by some bad turnovers, missed free throws, whatever it is. But no, they came out with urgency, went on a, I believe, 23 to nothing run, 34 to 2 at one point, if I'm not mistaken there. So just excellent. Excellent showing from Porter Moser and the squad there. And Vanderbilt, you mentioned them being last four in. That's a very good basketball team. They've upset some really good teams this year. I'd be shocked if they're not a tournament team by the end of the year. So, I mean, even that game being at home, Vanderbilt's not the sexy opponent that you might see from one of the bigger SEC schools, but it's still a great win and one that they needed very badly.
Yeah, it's a Vanderbilt, a really young team, but it felt like My big concern coming into that game for Oklahoma was not how are they going to match up with Vanderbilt or anything like that. It was just that Vanderbilt had just had their midweek bye. We saw the benefit that that was for Oklahoma when they had that. And it felt like early it was like a fresher Vanderbilt team who had the game plan nailed down. It felt like Oklahoma just had to survive that early kind of onslaught from deep. They did. What shifted there in the second half? And they weren't able to carry it into the Auburn game. We'll talk about Auburn here in a second. I mean, that's the number one team in the country. I don't think that there was any expectation on that game. But is there anything from that second half of the Vanderbilt game that you're thinking maybe they can roll into this weekend when they get back home to Lloyd Noble Center where they play a good deal better?
Well, I think part of it is they realized that this was one of the only games in the SEC where they're not going to have a big disadvantage size-wise. Them being one of the smaller teams in the league, that's always going to be something that hurts them rebounding-wise, blocks-wise. That really wasn't the case against Vanderbilt. As good as Vanderbilt is, they're not a huge team, and they realize they can kind of play some bully ball. They have the size compared to Vanderbilt's to do so. They looked good in the paint. This is the best rebounding I've seen from them all year. Like I mentioned, their defense was phenomenal. Some great defensive performances from Dayton Forsyth. He's really come into his own lately. Jeremiah Fears played a really good game that day too, which that was a rebound from an A&M performance where he got shut out, didn't score in that game. I think he dropped 24 in the Vanderbilt game, 8 of 12 shooting, so a very nice outing from him. And it was just every player that was playing well. There wasn't one unit lacking behind. Everyone was doing well. Sam Godwin, who's really struggled in conference play, he looked good. Duke Miles, same thing. Kobe Elvis, same thing. So really everyone I felt like was just playing together, weren't causing many turnovers, anything like that. It was just good, clean basketball.
An area that they didn't have a size advantage would have been as they headed down to the Plains to take on Auburn. What did anyone expect? Auburn's really good. They also are really beefy down low, which is Oklahoma's biggest weakness. So you take the number one team in the country at home. Their strength is Oklahoma's weakness. I was stunned that Oklahoma was even just, you know, down by 10 in the first half. And like Auburn just doesn't have those scoring lulls. And I don't know if the game for 25, 30 minutes was as bad as like the final score indicated, but there was never a moment where I felt like Oklahoma was really in the game. And that's not like a knock on Oklahoma. Like, that's just what Auburn's done to a lot of teams this year.
No, it totally is. I actually thought the first half went about as well as it could have for Oklahoma. Part of me thought that they might be down like 5 points at halftime. Like, they played competent basketball. They didn't totally get embarrassed. Obviously, the blocks and steals were big disparities in that game. Part of that being due to Auburn's size and athleticism down low. They really did bully them in the paint in both the first and the second half. Second half especially, you saw that. They went on their huge run, ended up winning by about 30 points. Don't remember the exact final, but it was ugly in the second half. But that's to be expected. I wrote about this. It's not a make or break game. Nobody expected Oklahoma to win this game. They were 17-point dogs in this one. So, I mean, you wanted to see a closer showing. You thought after the first half they might make it at least interesting. They didn't. But in the grand scheme of things, a loss still counts the same if it's by 2 points or 30 points when it comes to net rankings, tournament selection committee, especially against the best team in the country.
Yeah, I mean, my internal checklist was if Oklahoma was going to pull like an upset, they needed four things. You need a good first and second half from Jalen Moore. Can't just get one. After he got his tee in the first half, he totally just like became a non-factor. You needed Michigan or Arizona, that version of Jeremiah Fears. Didn't get it. You needed Bryson Goodine to get hypnotized and think that Auburn was Texas A&M. Didn't get it. And you needed to hit probably like 12 to 13 threes. And I think they hit 7 or 8. It was just one of those things of everything has to go right. And then you might not even win then. So I actually liked how they handled the atmosphere in the first half. I thought that was like a positive, especially with how we saw the Alabama and Georgia games go earlier this year. I thought that was like a really big positive. And like you said, I mean, you had to win the Vanderbilt game so that the Auburn game isn't a situation where you're like, well, we got to get one back and it has to be in the toughest spot of the year. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. Got to hold serve at home and try to target like Missouri on the road. So, like, they're good. They're really good, but they're not like this overwhelming Auburn team for at least what Oklahoma is right now.
Yeah, no, totally. I think If I had to make a bet, I'm not a betting man, but if I had to make a bet on one team to win the national championship at this point, it's probably the Auburn Tigers. I think they're the most complete team in the country. That offense is just hard to beat. They're great defensively too. So I just think they're an all-around weapon. A lot of size, a lot of athleticism. Like you said, I really do think that first half was positive. Like it, they didn't look overwhelmed by a very hostile atmosphere, a team that on paper is so much better than them. Obviously that showed up in the final score, but first half wise, they looked solid. Jeremiah Fears, it didn't help that he had a freshman game. Moore kind of shut down after a kind of hot start. So there's a lot they can learn from that game though, I feel like, before they face Tennessee.
As of the updated bracketology today, Oklahoma is totally off. I wouldn't say they're off the bubble, but if you talk about the eight teams on the right side, the eight teams on the wrong side, the last eight in, the first eight out, they're in neither of those. They're clear of that. We will see. They host Tennessee 11 a.m. Saturday. This one is a big one. This Tennessee team is not, they're really, really, really good, but it's not like insurmountable. Like I feel like Auburn kind of is. Ziegler's been banged up a little bit. He obviously missed the midweek contest, or excuse me, the weekend contest against Florida, was back in the swing of things last night against Mizzou, and Tennessee kind of outlasted that. We've seen Tennessee be unconscious from deep. We've also seen Tennessee miss, I think it was like 14 threes in the last 4 minutes against Kentucky, which was kind of puzzling because it was like a 2-point game. This is one that would be a really, really, really crucial win for Oklahoma to put in the back pocket because I don't think they're like safe and firmly in the tournament or anything like that. Like it's going to shift and slide. But what are you looking at this weekend as far as what does Oklahoma have to do to give themselves a shot with 3 minutes left to beat this Tennessee team?
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Well, anytime you're playing a team as good as Tennessee, you have to control the ball. That is something that in most of their SEC losses, that's plagued them. 18 or more turnovers in, I think, four games at this point in the SEC. That can't happen if you want to win any game in the SEC, especially a team like Tennessee. So they've got to take care of the ball. Jeremiah Fears, a lot of that starts with him being the point guard. That's an area that he's definitely gotten a little bit of a reality check since conference play began. Not to say that he still hasn't had an awesome year, because he definitely has. He has been a standout for this team, a lot of NBA potential there. But that has been one issue for him lately, and he needs to shore that up against a great team like Tennessee. Obviously, it's not just a one-man thing, though. A lot of players have turned the ball over in these losses. So that's a big thing. Rebounding, you just have to make the gap close. You're not going to out-rebound Tennessee, most likely. Just make sure it's not embarrassing. And honestly, Auburn, I think Auburn out-rebounded them by 10, which is not where you want to be. But compared to the A&M game where they got out-rebounded 47 to 19, that's a lot better than that. So if they can do similar to that, I think they might be in a position to win. And then also this, not on the team, Oklahoma needs to support their squad. They're playing a top five team. The Lloyd Noble attendance has not been great this year. Fans need to be in the building, get a rocking atmosphere. The crowd really got into it second half in the Vanderbilt game. That was the loudest I've ever seen the Lloyd Noble Center. So make it a tough place to play for Rick Barnes and his squad, and maybe it could be an interesting game.
Don't know if you're going to get that. 11 a.m., not like the best time on a Saturday. Also, every time Porter's got a crowd, they've absolutely sucked. So I think there's a lot of fans that are like, yeah, we all showed up last year and you fell on your face multiple times. I have said this before. I'll say I on the radio, I don't blame any OU fan that doesn't go to the Lloyd Noble Center to watch this team play. I think they're a waste of time. Like they every time they're in a spot like that, they show that they can't hack it. And we'll see. This is like a big one. If they don't beat this one, I'm firmly back into like, yeah, I don't think that there's enough games left that they're going to be able to win, but we'll see. It would require them to do something that they can't, which is play some sort of consistency the rest of the way. It's like they're not. It's like they're an awful team, but I still haven't seen like Jeremiah Pierce is still riding the roller coaster. And while that's a lot of pressure to put on a reclassified true freshman, it's the spot that they're in because you got some, I guess, nice minutes from Kobe Elvis late. I guess he's still trying to get acclimated, but I don't really see a ton of light at the end of the tunnel for this squad. We'll see. 11 a.m. You beat Tennessee, it could change real quick.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I think that they're a little bit closer to the bubble than the bracketologists maybe think at this point, just because of how difficult the schedule is the rest of the way. They have 16 wins at this point, but I think if they get to 20, I think they make the tournament. I think their resume, they'll have 7 conference wins at that point, 13 wins in the non-conference with 6 against power opponents. At this point, I think they only have 1 quad 2 loss, and that was against Texas, who has shown to be a lot better than people previously thought they were. As far as quality losses go, they have a ton of them. I don't think they're going to have any bad losses by the end of the year because they beat South Carolina. That's the only, quote, bad team in the conference. Everyone besides that, obviously you don't want to lose to LSU at home either. That's a game they should win. That would be a bad loss if they lost that one. Even if they could just get 4 more wins, that's 4 probably quad one wins that they'd get to their resume, joining, I think, 3 others at this point. They definitely have a pretty good case, even if that is double-digit losses on the year. But I'm not a bracketologist. Everyone I've talked to who covered last year's team said that they probably should have made it last year. They didn't. The selection committee has a weird way of doing things when it comes to Sunday. So we will not know until the day of.
Yeah, the thing last year, too, is they had like 7 bids got stolen. You know what I mean? So it's like if only 4 of those get stolen, they probably sneak in.
Yeah.
It's like so similar to last year in this way of when you look at where they are right now, most of their resume's done. Getting like a bunch of wins. The thing that they have in their back pocket this year that they didn't have last year is last year the USC win, the Iowa win, all that stuff. Those wins didn't mean anything by the end of the year because those teams got worse and worse and worse. Arizona might be playing the best ball in the Big 12 right now, certainly yeah. Among. Michigan has done a really nice job. Yeah. Louisville, up until this last week, had played really, really well despite some of those injuries where I really believe 7 wins in conference play will get them in.
I do too.
It's just the getting to – I don't have the faith in them to get to 7. It's like the theory of the case, I think, is totally there. It's just I've been burned, I think, 3 too many seasons by
That's
this.
Fair. That's fair.
Jaden Ryan, who's ridden the Porter Moser train a couple times, has been like, this feels familiar.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. It's going to be an interesting last few weeks. A lot of tough games, so should be exciting, though.
Yeah, the big ones, get this Tennessee one. If you can get a split at Missouri, take care of this against LSU, then boom, you're to what, 6? Then it's kind of just try to grab one more and you're there. Good performance at the SEC tournament couldn't hurt either. On the women's side of things, they're hanging on for like a different reason. They're not hanging on like, oh my gosh, are they going to be a tournament team? But they Baton Rouge, that one comes down to the wire. They're down by 24 at one point in the third quarter, fire all the way back, go down by 1 with the minute and a half left, but can't get that thing done. And then Kentucky, they were out there at the Lloyd Noble Center, a top 13 battle at the time. And you're thinking, okay, Kentucky is shooting lights out. What's going to happen here? Oklahoma claws back, gets it down by 1 right at a halftime. But Georgia Moore just absolutely throttled Oklahoma, 43 points for the vet. She was on fire. And for OU, it's not like the conversation of in the tournament, out of the tournament. The conversation is, can they hang on to that 4 seed and host the first 2 weekends? Or is it going to be like the last 2 years where they were the 5 seed and one of the top 5 seeds, but they're going to have to hit the road? You look at it, and unfortunately for OU, their 2 best wins to the non-conference, Louisville and Michigan, Those two teams are now, they've fallen out of the top 25, and Mississippi State was a bad loss, but you look at elsewhere, South Carolina, Texas, LSU, those are all top 10 losses. Kentucky has flirted between like 9 to 14 all year long. It's like none of those losses are bad losses by any means, but they're kind of running out of big marquee moments to add. And if they get on that, hey, are you a 4, are you a 5? Right now, there's not a lot of like wins, but two ranked matchups left, one against Vanderbilt, one against Alabama. Tonight, Thursday, they're on the road at Ole Miss. I'd rank that like the third most difficult game remaining. First off, road game, but Ole Miss is a team that's kind of receiving votes. They've bounced around like 22 to, if we like pull the poll out unofficially, like 22 to like 35, that kind of thing. So we'll see here if Ginny Brownchek and this crew, they need to get Skylar Van going. Got to find a way. They've made one lineup change already, putting Raina Scott in for Nabeah Tott. Skylar Van's done well defensively. She's continued to create. She's nowhere near the score that she was a year ago, and they just simply have to get that, I feel like, if they're going to be able to push over the edge and take that next step to get closer to the top of the SEC than the, not the bottom or the middle by any means, but kind of like that second tier. It feels like it's South Carolina, Gap, Texas, LSU, Gap, Kentucky, Oklahoma, but Kentucky obviously has the head-to-head, so they're above them.
Yeah. One thing I want to ask, I know that turnovers were a big struggle early in the conference season. Has that been fixed pretty well?
It's gotten better. I don't know if it's like fully fixed. It's also like they play so up tempo that there's always
going to happen. Yeah.
It's going to be skewed a little bit, but part of the stuff that, you know, Ginny's talked about is if they're being aggressive, making things happen and a turnover happens, like you don't want any turnovers ever, but that's one that you can kind of live with. It's been some of the entry passes and stuff like that. And I hate to hammer somebody, but like Nabeah Tott, I feel like was the number one kind of aggressor of a bunch of that stuff. And Raina Scott has come in. I think she's kind of like calmed things down initially. If it were me, I might see like Skylar Van's a former sixth man of the year. I might see if you flip-flop Lexi Keys and Skylar Van. I don't know if it would do anything substantially for turnovers, but Lexi can hit threes. Maybe Skylar can get more comfortable coming off the bench again. She hasn't done it in a long time. Last year, they tried that once. It went poorly, and Ginny kind of talked about that in the Kentucky post game. But it's definitely a group that has not – like, the good news is I think there's, like, a ton of room for growth. But you look at it, man, you got, like, seven games left in the conference. Like, they – need to be a team, especially with the teams that they've got left, that they're floating under 500 SEC play, but they're definitely playing like the bottom half of the conference now. They need to come into that SEC tournament winning like 6 of 7 or something like that, and then get some momentum back. And if they do that, I think they'll be right there kind of like battling out in a committee room, I guess, for like a 4 seed or a 5 seed or something like that.
How do you think that them facing such a gauntlet to start conference play is going to help them not only this year, but future years, going to the SEC tournament this year, stuff like that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge because like in years past, you'd have Iowa State was pretty good for a couple of years. Texas is obviously a big time battle. Kansas State has been a challenge for Oklahoma in years past in a kind of a different way, but the level of athlete at South Carolina and LSU is still just a lot different than even those top teams in the Big 12 other than Texas. And so I think being exposed to that earlier means that there should not be a learning curve when they came up against this Notre Dame team that's rocking and rolling. They kind of crushed them 3 years ago with some really young pieces. It was tough against UCLA 2 years ago. Look at where UCLA is now. You know what I mean? Like those are two top five teams at Oklahoma. I feel like they were younger then, but Oklahoma didn't really have a great, like, oh my gosh, it took them a half before they acclimated that physicality and that just athleticism. Then by then it was too late. So I think that should be good there. The biggest key is going to be, have they been able to maintain their confidence through this and recognize, like, again, outside of Mississippi State, even Duke in the non-conference, every single game that they've lost has been literally a top 15 opponent. So it's like, you are a good basketball team. Do you need to make some fixes and get better to jump from good to great or elite? Absolutely. But just because you haven't done that yet doesn't mean you're not capable. It's just that's kind of the curve that they're grading on. So I'm really intrigued to kind of see what the back half of this conference slate looks like for Oklahoma. And that, of course, starts Thursday night, 6:30. They're out in Oxford.
Sounds like there's a lot people should be optimistic about. That sounds like a team that some tough losses, but good opponents they've lost to. So ultimately, probably good results in the future for them then.
Yeah, plenty of opportunity there. So should be good. That we're about, you know, the halfway point or a little bit over it, depending on if you're on the men's side of Lloyd Noble Center or the women's side of Lloyd Noble Center. As always, though, Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com. Carson, you'll be there Saturday morning for all the happenings, good, bad, ugly, pretty. Otherwise, it'll be there. Porter and crew afterwards, Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com for all your takeaways, analysis, press conference, all that fun stuff. Same thing with the women. And if you go to OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com today, you hit the baseball tab and scroll, you'll go, holy crap, guys, Oklahoma a week and a day away. Next Friday, Valentine's Day, the Sooners get it rolling. You got to talk to Skip and some of the boys yesterday. That's why we had the podcast one day later, because you were obviously down in Norman. What was kind of your takeaway? It felt like they covered a lot. Excitement about the rotation, SEC, the Witherspoon's improvement, Cam Johnson coming over from LSU. It seems like you guys hit a lot yesterday at Baseball Media Day.
Oh, there is a lot to talk about there. He gave us about 30 minutes worth of stuff to talk about, so obviously we won't cover all of it, but I'll try to hammer down some of the main points. One of those being how excited he is to be in the SEC. I mean, this is the conference that has produced the last five national champions, three of the last five runners-up, six of the last seven national champions. I mean, it's the juggernauts. OU is widely expected to be around the top 25 this year. They're picked 11th in the preseason poll, and that's not saying OU's not good. That's just how dang good this conference is. I mean, you look at Tennessee and A&M, the two teams that played for the national title last year. Florida is going to be really good. LSU is always really good. Vanderbilt, same thing. So, I mean, there's so many kind of blue bloods of college baseball in this conference, like there is in football, obviously, a lot of the other sports that the SEC is so good at. But he seemed very excited to have this new level of competition. Obviously, some good programs in the Big 12. They played with Texas for years. Texas has definitely been a strong program for both of our lifetimes. But it definitely, it means more. That's what people in this conference will tell you. But it kind of does in baseball. It's a heck of a conference, and I think that's going to be fun. Just seeing some of these blue bloods in baseball come to the L. Dale Mitchell Field and just play against the Sooners, that should be able to get some good turnouts from fans, students, stuff like that. Kind of join what Skip said, that it's kind of like a football atmosphere in a baseball arena. That's the analogy he put in the SEC. Obviously, they don't have the facilities of Alex Box Stadium at LSU, Olsen Field at A&M, but getting to be in that same thing, hopefully get some of the turnouts that those schools get. He's excited to see where this program goes. But more from a personnel standpoint, the main thing that he first led off with was about his pitching staff. That's the most experienced group, the Witherspoon brothers. They come in with very high hopes. Both played with Team USA this past summer, played in the Cape Cod Baseball League. And it's not just those two, really good bullpen. They think it's going to be one of the deeper bullpens in the SEC. Offense, that's something that there's a lot to be seen, I feel like, and Skip admitted that. But talking to the Witherspoons, they think that there's a lot of people that are tough outs that they admitted they have not really enjoyed pitching to all that much because of their slugging ability. So they're confident that they're going to have a strong offense that is going to keep them competitive in the best conference in college baseball.
Yeah, you look at a really, really deep starting rotation. If you just look across some of the national previews, SEC previews, stuff like that, you keep seeing top-end rotation, could be an Omaha dark horse if everything comes together offensively. They're replacing so much, but you look at Easton Carmichael and Jackson Willits as far as guys in the field, guys in that offense walk that are kind of coming back to step up into a bigger role as leaders. And the other thing, too, with how they play is they're they have such a like firm offensive identity of they're going to run, they're going to steal, they're going to take extra bases, stuff like that, that to be a true like threat at the very, very top of college baseball, do you need to hit a bunch of home runs? Yeah, obviously. Like you need to have that kind of offense. But until Oklahoma is able to get everyone acclimated and really settle in 1 through 9, what they want to do, it feels like you blend that rotation with the kind of pressure that Oklahoma's offense puts on opposing pitchers and defenses once they get anybody on. It should be a pretty comfortable ramping up process. And much like we'll see with softball, like, I mean, it's a who's who of former national champions recent that are like coming to Norman this year to play at El Dell. So you've got a really big weekend, that second weekend, but you're hoping for a pretty steady build into the season, you feel like, from a schedule standpoint for the baseball side of life.
I do like how they built the schedule quite a bit. I mean, they start the year with Lehigh. That should, by all measures, be a sweep. Obviously, crazier things have happened before, but that should be a sweep for the Sooners. Then they play in Round Rock. They play against teams like Oregon State, Minnesota, and Virginia. Oregon State, obviously, one of the most storied programs in all of college baseball. Virginia, perennial contender in the ACC. They also play non-conference games against Oklahoma State, Dallas Baptist, Oral Roberts, all three of those good programs in this day and age. And then obviously that kind of leads up to SEC play, which they get to host a lot of their harder games, which does work in their favor. I believe they host LSU. I don't have the schedule in front of me, so forgive me. But it seemed like some of their quote easier. There really isn't an
Right,
easy
grading on a
schedule.
curve, grading on a curve for sure.
But they play Missouri, who was picked to finish last. That's one of their road series. South Carolina, not picked as high. That's one of their road series. Some of the recent champions that they play are at the Eldale Mitchell, so that's good. So I like the way that this schedule's drawn up. I looked at some of the other draws in the league, LSU and A&M's. I saw those, and those both looked like total gauntlets, worst draws as far as road versus home. So I think Oklahoma's. I mean, there's never an easy schedule in this league, but I think this is one that really sets them up for a pretty good year in their first year in the conference.
It's something they were so good at last year. I know it's gonna be so different. Was they just that team just felt like it didn't get swept a whole lot, and they had a really weird year last year. They played like six conference doubleheaders because of weather that kept pushing stuff to Sunday doubleheaders and stuff like that. And it was a really resilient group. Should be deeper there on the front line rotation. They got a ton of different arms out of the pen. So really excited to see what that looks like. That gets going, like we said, next Friday. That Lehigh series in Norman. Today, Thursday, the softball team, Patty Gasso and crew, they start their six-game swing to open up life. Two on Thursday, they'll open against Cal State Northridge. That's at 5:30 on Thursday. Then they'll close with San Diego State. Friday, they'll go play Cal Baptist and Cal State Fullerton. Saturday, they got a game against Loyola Marymount. And then Sunday, they'll close with Long Beach State. Got to talk with Patty last Saturday, and she used the where it's rejuvenated as far as her finally getting to coach again. She's talking about this a lot, but with 10 seniors that have been through it and all that stuff, she was almost playing like psychologist as much as softball coach. Now she's getting to work with that. And Oklahoma has been known for power, been known for setting home run records. They're not going to run away from hitting home runs and hitting the long ball, but the first group of Patty teams, especially the mid 2010s, that 2012 team, stuff like that, had slappers, they could run. Patty was in her card, hitting runs, taking extra bases, stuff like that. Between Abby Dayton and Ilana Agbayani, and even Ella Parker, who was your most prolific freshman stolen base caliber type player since Jada Coleman, I think Patty's gonna be really, really excited to. It's gonna get back to a little bit of the chess match as opposed to just. There were times, man, the last 3 or 4 years that she would always talk about, I wanna do a hit and run. And say we move the runner over, and then Tiare Jennings steps up and hits a home run. And I t went from a 2-run shot to what could have been 3 or 4 if there were more runners on the base pass. And all. And she's like, then I just get in my head. And in the end, she just goes, I just swing away, type stuff like that. So I'm excited to see what the offense looks like, man, because you're looking at a bunch of new pieces and a bunch of young pieces stepping up into a much bigger role.
No, there's obviously always so much interest in this team. I'm so interested to see how they adjust to their first year in the SEC. I know that this conference is traditionally strong. Obviously, Texas coming with them, they were the number one overall seed last year, lost to OU in the Women's College World Series final. A&M lost to Texas by one run in the Super Regionals in the game three, so they're obviously very good. Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, those are all traditionally very good programs. Is the conference supposed to be that strong again this year?
Yeah, you're looking at your consensus top three is in some order, Florida and Texas, which I liken where Oklahoma's at this year is kind of where Texas was 2 years ago, which was a bunch of freshmen and they came in and like gangbusters, they immediately rocked and rolled. And some will say that they didn't overachieve. I think that with how many freshmen they relied on, They were a little bit of a surprise. I thought they'd be Supers good. I didn't know if they'd be OKC good. They obviously finished in the Women's College World Series. Florida, a year ago, a ton of those freshmen, one of the biggest, most talented freshman classes we've seen. They almost knocked Oklahoma out of the dang thing themselves. So you got Florida and Texas. They're either one or two. The SEC coaches had Texas at one. A lot of the other places have Florida at one, Oklahoma at three. All of that, I think, just because a lot of respect for Oklahoma. Texas and Florida are just like a year or two ahead of what this Oklahoma team is at. But you look around, Tennessee is going to be right up there again. In a weird way, LSU and Georgia don't maybe have some of the preseason expectations that have been put on them in the last couple of years. Like they're still going to be really good, but maybe a year as going back to being more dark horse than like, is this the year they break through and get to Oklahoma City? That'll be huge. Then like Alabama brought in a really nice transfer class. You got some really talented freshman classes at Arkansas that. They're excellent. It's just going to be a bunch of new faces. It's hard to kind of project coming in, but you would assume that by the time this year is over, it's going to be that feel just like on the baseball side of things. That is what they say in the SEC country. It's a super regional every weekend, right? It's going to be that way for baseball, that way for softball, and I think we're going to be treated to one of the most fun springs around here with the sprint to the tournament for both basketball teams opening up right. Like Selection Sunday coming right around when SEC plays hitting full swing, and it's gonna be a really, really busy just parking lot out there at the Lloyd-Noble Center between Eldell, Loves Field, and the LNC.
No, it definitely is. It's got to be fun for Oklahoma fans too. I know that basketball, there have been some games that might have made fans roll their eyes with the men's team at this point, but the fact that they're competitive and most people still expect them to make it, this is four teams that I think have very good chances to make the NCAA tournament in their respective sports. So, I mean, you've got to look at that largely as a success for your program. Obviously, that's expected with softball and women's basketball with the histories that OU has there. But baseball, I feel like this program's really gotten better the last few years. Men's basketball, this could be Porter's first year making the tournament. I feel like there is so much positive stuff going on that it's fun to be a reporter. It would be even more fun to be a Sooners fan. So I hope anyone watching this goes to the games. If you see us out there, say hello. So yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to especially the baseball stuff. You look at like skips last 5 years. You go back to the 2020 season when that shut down. Oklahoma was playing as good as baseball as anybody. That wasn't like a whispering, could they make it to Omaha? They were like one of the favorites. Then you get a couple years later, they do make it all the way to the Champ Series that against Ole Miss last year, hosting a regional in Norman for the first time in over a decade. I mean, you got that going. You got four straight national championships, just a little bit farther along. Throw it down there. It should be a ton of fun. And Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com is the place for all of our coverage. It's totally free. You don't need to pop anything in. All the videos, all the game coverage, all the time over there at Sooners on SI, Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com, as well as gymnastics. They're rock and roll. And they got a top eight meet. Women's shim does OUV Kentucky. That one is on Friday, 7:45 at the LNC. But everything is rocking and rolling. And well, this was like the quote unquote down period as we ramp straight back up in. Spring football's gonna be firing in full swing here before you know it, and we'll be back in the mix of all that crossover season. It's tiring, but it's fun. It's incredible. So should be a bunch of fun. Carson, my man, thank you for coming along with me today. I know without Hoove. And hey, if you want, just hey, you guys have thrown out a lot of websites, stuff like that. Here's the easiest thing to do: go to X, Twitter, whatever the hell. At Sooners on SI, follow that. At Johnny Hoover, that's the boss man. I'm at underscore Ryan Chapman. Carson is at Carson D Field. You can get all of our work, follow along all spring long. But Carson, have we missed anything? Have we covered all of our bases here on this Thursday?
Think we got it all. I'm glad
Beautiful.
you stressed how exciting this time is. Softball, I'm excited to fill in for you next week with some of those games, just see what this program's about. I love watching good, high quality softball teams. Like I mentioned on last week's pod, used to cover the ASU team when I was a student there. Made a trip with them to the WCWS, so that was a blast. Obviously, baseball getting started next week too. So this is just such an exciting time. So I am excited to be a little bit dealing with more of a chaotic schedule.
Yeah, you'll have the entirety of the opening weekends at Loves Field. So buckle up, my friend. I'm throwing you like eight games. Hey, congratulations. Enjoy it. We will see on the other side. But that's all the damage we can do this week. For Carson, for who? Bye, Brian. Thanks for coming along. We'll talk to you guys on the Sooners on SI Pod next week.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.